Stuffcast. I'm John. George. We have a lot to talk about tonight. And I say that every week, but I got to tell you something. This is a particularly action-packed week. And, you know, when we were talking about this and thinking about the Dubcast over the weekend, we're like, okay, well, we'll talk about the Illinois loss. That sucks. Who's going to be the coach? Blah, blah, blah. And then about 50 things happened in the interim. So we can start with the Illinois loss. I don't want to dwell on it because there's so much going on. I will say this. First of all, I don't know that that would have alone, if they had won that game, I don't know that that would have gotten in the NCAA tournament. However, it definitely would have given them a better shot, and they would have, you know, potentially been able to, you know, take on and beat Nebraska. So that sucks. I hate the fact that the refs kind of took that game over
rigged.
In the second half.
Rigged.
That's right. Where's your money coming from, freaking ref? Like, it was disappointing in part because it's bad basketball. Like, you don't really want to watch that as a fan. It's also frustrating just as an Ohio State fan because it felt like every single shot they were putting up was an and one. You know, and that really was the difference in the game. Overall, the teams are really evenly matched. They played, I think, pretty, you know, good basketball in the second half. Ohio State did. But it just, too many mistakes. Frustrating. But, you know, they still have a lot to look forward to, and we're going to be talking about that in a second. I just want to ask you this real quick question about the game, George. Late in the second half, Ohio State had been kind of going on a run. I think they were up there like a 6-0 run or an 8-0 run, and Jake Diebler called a timeout, right? And I don't know whether it was to just make sure his guys could, you know, do something more defensively, you know, figure out how they were going to approach the last, you know, part of the second half. But a lot of people would say maybe that was something that killed momentum a little bit. Do you think that that was a bad call in that situation, or do you think it maybe didn't really have a whole lot of impact in the grand scheme of things?
Well, that, it's kind of become one of his calling cards in the infancy of his coaching career, because if you recall, after the Michigan game, I praised what he did when he called a timeout after going a basket that Ohio State scored that put them up by 16 points with like 5 minutes left to play.
Yeah.
And a big reason in doing that was, you know, trying to not only get, I don't think that they emptied the bench of seniors because it was senior day precisely at that point. I think it was closer to when there were 2 minutes left in the game, but mm-hmm. Part of the reason he did that was to, you know, emphasize what they were doing right and tighten up and secure the lead so that, you know, because they wanted to get the end of the bench in and they weren't going to be able to do that if they let Michigan back into the game. So I praised him for that timeout, and it would be kind of contradictory for me to come back and say like, oh, he did the wrong thing, you know, giving, you know, calling a timeout after they had good momentum. I'm not really of the belief that I think that a timeout does more for a team that is losing the momentum or has lost the momentum to kind of give right. them a reset than it snaps a good streak for a team or rhythm for a team that is doing well in that moment and then has a momentary stoppage. So I don't really think that that's what affected Diebler as much as, you know, I think there have been several people that pointed this out, but I think the person that brought it to our attention was Jason Priestess when he said, of the 31 points that Illinois scored in the last like 10 plus minutes, only 6 of them came on field goals that had nothing to, that weren't and ones, or just points that had nothing to do with free throws at all.
Right.
And
which is ridiculous.
Yeah. And I think that had a lot more to do with throwing off rhythm and mounting frustration than anything that was really within Diebler's control. So it leaves a bad taste in your mouth as the last game of a season that had become suddenly very exciting for Ohio State. Mm-hmm. But obviously we can't really dwell on it that much because, you know, there's been some significant momentous change
right.
that has taken place since then that deserves more attention than, you know, lamenting the end of Ohio State's basketball season,
right?
At least the regular season. We still have the NIT to look forward to.
Presumably. Well, right, and that's kind of the thing, though, right? Like, it was a long shot in the NCAA tournament to begin with, but you're only in that position because you've got a coach who had led that team to a win over Purdue. Then they, you know, barnstormed to the end of the regular season, and they looked pretty good. You know, to start off the Big Ten tournament. So, you know, you've got this guy in Jake Diebler, and look, he's now the head basketball coach of the Ohio State men's basketball team. And I am surprised by this. It's not.
We didn't expect this.
Yeah. Yeah. We can get the pros and cons of this, as we go through it, but the biggest thing to me is that I'm just surprised that this is the decision that Ohio State ended up making, not because Jake Diebler is a bad coach or he doesn't deserve it or anything like that. It's more in the sense that if you're in Ross Bjork's position, and we talked about this in previous Dubcast, right? You want to make a statement with your, you know, first major hire. And instead of going out and getting a Sean Miller or a Dusty May or something like that, Ohio State kind of played it a little safe, and they went with the known quantity. They went up with a guy who's been with the program for a long time and who has a lot of support of the fans, right? Who, you know, has that momentum, and there's nothing wrong with that. But I'm a little surprised that this is the route that they decided to go down. And what I was thinking about, you know, especially as there are basketball openings, you know, across the country, but especially at places like Louisville and Michigan now, right, with Juwan Howard being fired. We'll talk about that in a little bit. Maybe Ohio State got into a bidding war and they just said, the hell with it. We're not overpaying for a Dusty May or a Sean Miller. We're going to go with, you know, a $2.5 million contract.
I mean, it threw me off that they, you know, paid a dollar sign Texas buyout and promoted from within.
Right.
It seems a little contradictory. So
it's a little weird.
Well, especially if, you know, to the point it's like, oh, if the reasoning was, or at least part of the reasoning was they got outbid. I mean, it's unfortunate to think that, you know, part of the reason they got outbid is because they are having to pay a huge, you know, eight-figure sum to Chris Holtmann. So if, you know, you would have hoped that if they were willing to pay that much to get rid of somebody, that they would then follow that up with a, you know, paying a similar amount of money to make sure that they make the right replacement instead of just going with someone that they, and I'm not saying that Diebler got lowballed or anything on the terms of his contract, but presumably that guy has less negotiating power than a lot of the other candidates that they were looking at.
And, yeah, you would think.
It's, yeah. Part of me also looks at this and thinks that this is in some way, and this is a strong term and not really meant to slight the decision as much, but it does feel like kind of a cop-out in the sense that if it doesn't work out, Gene Smith is still technically part of the athletic program. Mm-hmm. And because there is some, you know, because it is a promotion from within with ties to the last guy that just got let go, it feels like if this doesn't end up working out, it is easy for the people sympathetic to the athletic director to spin whoever he would end up hiring afterwards as his first true new hire, free of any sort of influence from Gene Smith. So
in other words, it's not like this isn't the real, you know, this isn't the real hire.
Right.
You know, this is just, we did it because it's what we had to do. And this is, you know, it was the logical thing, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. This is, this is like a safe decision, but in some ways it feels almost too safe. And that it's, you know, easy to say that it was the wrong decision like 2 years from now if Ohio State still hasn't made the NCAA tournament or doesn't make the most of its incoming recruiting classes. But it's I don't think it's a hire that can inspire a lot of confidence, even in spite of what we saw to end the season. I think that this team absolutely got a bump from letting go of a coach that almost certainly held back its ceiling relative to what we talked about at the beginning of the season, but also in light of, you know, comments that Chris Holtmann made not only in his waning weeks on the job, but also in his introduction to his new job at DePaul.
Yeah, we'll get into that later, too. That was pretty irritating.
Yeah, so I just don't – this feels like a very safe decision, but there's also safe for the people making the decision, at least.
I think that's the best way to put it, right? It's not necessarily safe for Ohio State, but it's definitely one of those decisions.
Yeah, there's still a ton of long-term risk involved that they can't make you feel good as a fan, I don't think.
But the people who made the decision can go back later and say, like, oh, well, we tried, and then go back, and then it's not it's – let me put it this way.
Feels like kicking the can down the road.
A little bit. And, look, I don't want to, you know, make this seem like we hate Jake Diebler or anything like that or think he's a terrible coach or anything. We just don't know. Like, there's no there's such a small sample size. It's really difficult to get a handle on, you know, what you're going to be seeing out of this guy and what he's going to be able to do as managing program. If he turns in the next, you know, Mike Krzyzewski, that's great. You know, that's awesome. But there's just so little evidence to that. And
he might,
you know,
just be the next Randy Ayers.
He could be. And the thing is, man, is like, I want him obviously to be successful. I think he's a really good dude. You know, John Diebler's been on the Dubcast before. We've talked to him. He's an incredibly great guy. I hope he ends up joining his brother here. I think that would be awesome. It's not anything against these guys. It's just that when you're in a transitional period as a program like this, and you're worried about competing against, yeah, the Michigans of the world who are going to be hiring a new guy, and you're thinking about recruits in the Midwest and all that stuff, I think it's advantageous. I think it's smart to have somebody who's established, who understands the networks, who, you know, has kind of credentials that they can recruit on and build upon and whatnot. And to be fair, Jake Diebler is, you know, considered to be one of the better recruiters on the men's basketball team. I'm not taking that away from him, but it does feel like, I think kicking the can down the road almost feels like I think that's a really good descriptor of this, which is, again, he could be great. It's not about that. It's about what are the known quantities that you're bringing to the program. So I obviously the players really love him. Obviously he can recruit. I am cautiously optimistic, but I'm also like, if we're looking for an immediate return to, you know, like the Thad Mata years or whatever, I don't know that you're going to get that. I don't know that you're going to get a coach who's going to be able to make the team an instant competitor. And it might be a longer process. And the problem with that is if that, you know, is a multi-year rebuild, then when do you decide to pull the cord, right? Like, when do you decide that it's been long enough? And that's the problem. Like, Ohio State's going to find themselves thinking that if Diebler isn't an immediate success. So I think that's the difficulty here.
It's going to be particularly tough to stomach that if Michigan, in replacing Juwan Howard, gets somebody that Ohio State was considering as one of its own candidates.
Right.
The speculation is Dusty May is probably going to go to Louisville instead of Ohio State now, but if Michigan swoops in and makes a bombshell offer of their own, it's you know, it's going to be tough as an Ohio State fan to look at that and say, we could have had somebody like that in this position. And
what if Michigan
from within?
Now, I don't think this is going to happen because Michigan just lost their best player who's hitting the transfer portal. But what if Michigan ends up making the NCAA tournament before Ohio State does, after they've both, you know, had to make new hires? That's going to leave a pretty sour taste in a lot of people's mouths. Now, again, do I think that's going to happen? Probably not, because Michigan basketball is an absolute tire fire right now.
I'm sour with any ounce of their success, period.
That's exactly right. Yes, exactly right. So with that said, you know, at his press conference, he said all the right things. You know, he said what his expectations were. I think we should be constantly in the conversation for Big Ten championships. We have a blue blood type program. We need to be consistent in maximizing those ingredients. You know, that was Ross Bjork and what he wants. You know, and
easier said than done.
Yes, that is absolutely true. You know, Jake Diebler said that he's going to talk about family over and over again. I think he said there was another quote he said where it was like less than a millisecond for him to accept this, which is not like, no kidding. You know, he talked about timing being important. It's about serving the players as best as he can. I mean, all of this is, you know, people are saying the right things. I think they understand what the expectations are and what fans want. And obviously, the other kind of unspoken thing about this is that Ohio State attendance rate has been plummeting over the past couple years and with the lack of success that the men's basketball program has had. So you definitely want somebody who's going to bring some excitement to the, you know, to the basketball team and get people interested in it. And honestly, I mean, let's say you brought in, you know, some super high scoring offensive coach or something like that. I actually, the biggest thing that's going to get people to pay attention is winning. And the men's basketball team, they just need consistency. And that's, I think, why this particular hire makes
And that's why they hired someone with no head coaching experience.
Exactly.
Prior to and a again, month ago.
That's what I'm saying, man. And it's not that I think he's going to be a bad coach. It's that I just don't know. And at this point in Ohio State men basketball and their you know, history, where they're at right now, the crossroads that they stand, I think you need somebody with a little bit of, you know, some bona fides that they've established. So I don't know. That's where I'm at with it. I don't think, again, that it's necessarily like some disaster of a hire or anything like that. It's just that this is an unknown and a time when they really need a known quantity. That's kind of how I feel about it.
I will say the flip side of that is that they could have hired someone from, you know, without any previous program ties, and they could have lost a lot of not only what's on the roster right now, but also what presumably could be coming in. And then we would be upset about, you know, the lack of continuity and consistency with respect to that, if that had happened. So if that had really been the most important thing for them, is retaining the existing and already committed talent that is still scheduled to come in, then I think that this was probably the right decision. But again, it just feels like this was this is a more extreme way of putting it, because I don't think the situation is this dire. But you know, you alluded to the fact that the program, relative to, you know, attendance and interest, seems like it's been on the decline. This, in some ways, feels like plugging the holes in the dam with fingers as opposed to actually fixing or putting effort towards fixing the structural problems in place for a long-term solution. So it's, I think that you have to feel much better right now about how things are going to look short term than long term. The question then is, if things don't immediately get better, or things are kind of slowly getting worse year over year after some initial front end success, at what point does it become time to assess whether or not a change should be made again?
Right.
So,
because I think you got to give them at least, like, you know, 2 or 3 years, and that's a long time.
Yeah,
that's a long time for a new Ohio. I mean, it's not, you know, you want Ohio State to be in the NCAA tournament, and when you have a new coach, you're going to give them some time to get there. And you know, I would rather hire a coach that's been to the NCAA tournament many times, and you know that they can do it, and they've established a way to do it and a system and everything, than a guy who has coached 8 games. And I think that's the difference here. So again, wish him all the best. I think he's got a lot of enthusiasm. Obviously he's going to be able to retain the core of the team, the recruits. That's awesome. You want to see that. But there's just a lot of unknowns here. Also, with that said, what I think is really kind of fascinating about this is that Ohio State has accepted the invitation to the NIT, right? So they're going, I don't know if you would call that dancing, but they're
to
like
the delight of Tom Crean, who would have been my first choice for new Ohio State head coach.
I guess they're like electric sliding into the NIT here. They'll play Cornell. I don't know how that's going to go. I don't know anything about Cornell.
Nerds.
I do think it's the teams in the NIT are kind of interesting. Like there's a Xavier that they could, you know, if they win a couple games in this, they could potentially
play. Sorry, not in tournament has never been of interest to me, but you know, credit to the players for going out for one last hurrah.
Well, here's the thing about that, though, right? If they decide to play in the NIT, what happens if they get bounced by Cornell in the first game, right? The first game of Jake Diebler's official, you know, head coaching tenure. I don't know. I think it's almost kind of a risk. If I'm Jake Diebler and I'm Ohio State, I'm like, no, we're gonna practice. We're gonna take some time to get better before immediately throwing us into a tourney situation. If they win some games and they go on a run, then that I think justifies this hire. But if they come out and they look like crap, then everybody's gonna be second guessing it. To me, this is like a very high risk, low reward situation, because if you win the NIT, nobody's gonna care. But if you lose and you look bad or whatever, then they're going to start making, judgment.
Yeah, there's a big risk for an egg on your face situation for sure. Yeah.
So I think it's, to me, that's interesting because you really want them to show out and win at least a couple games here and prove that, you know, Jake Diebler was the right call. So I just find that really interesting. They're going to be playing here. It's on Tuesday, which will be, you know, as of the publication of this podcast, you know, it's going to be that night. So we'll get a real quick look very soon here about, you know, what an official Jake Diebler led team looks like. In general, I just want to talk real briefly, since the NCAA tournament here is obviously starting, you know, very soon. What have you looked over the bracket? Do you have any sense about, you know, how the Big Ten's going to do, who your, you know, Final Four picks are? You have any confidence in that?
No, last year was the first time in my adult life that I actually didn't do any brackets. And really? Honestly, I'm so irritated by that Ohio State Illinois game being the way that this season ended that I don't really feel like I enjoyed being able to watch the first two rounds last year without the stress of like thinking, oh my God, I want my picks to do well. I was just able to root for every single underdog and hope that chaos reigned. And
it did for the most part. It was a crazy tournament.
Oh yeah. That Princeton Arizona game was a lot of fun. And I'm hopeful that the same thing is going to happen again this year. So I'm probably not going to do another bracket this year. And I know that's not the answer that most people want to hear. And it sounds really lame, but I'll, you know, I'll be the contrarian that just sits out again for a second year. And, last year it wasn't really I don't really know why I didn't feel compelled to do it last year, but well, actually I do know. You know, it's funny. I was 2 years ago, I was actually in the hospital like for a couple of days leading up to like the week leading up to the first round of the tournament.
I think that's a fair reason not to be.
Well, but here's what I did with my time in the hospital. And then like the day or two that I had doing recovery, I did like a truly obscene amount of like statistical research on every, like on my bracket. Like I was like, okay, I'm going to like develop a system and I'm going to like, see if I'm going to see how my picks do based on prioritizing these stats and, you know, comparing it with KenPom and all this stuff. And it was the worst bracket I've ever picked. The worst one.
Well, everybody's bracket got blown up. I mean, it wasn't.
Well, this was in 2022. It wasn't last year. This was 2022. It was the most effort I had ever put into picking a bracket. And it was the worst bracket that I ever produced.
Well, that's the lesson.
And at that point, I was like, you know what? I took this way too serious. Because at that point, I'm thinking of like, you know, every like spouse of like a try hard, die hard college basketball fan who just does something like, oh, I threw $10 into my husband's bracket pool and I picked based on which favorite mascots I liked. And then, you know, they end up like winning the whole thing or at least finishing top five. And it's like, I put way too much effort into this compared to even people that actually care even more than me. And that's not the way that you should be enjoying this.
No,
I'm not going to get that payout from Warren Buffett. So that's I might as well.
You're not going to get the perfect bracket. you might as well just have fun with it.
Yeah, I'm not going to keep chasing the unicorn. So I,
that's fair.
You know, maybe if I get back into like an office pool or something like another year from now, I might like, you know, do that for fun. But it, I want to normalize, if you're a fan of college sports, not making a bracket just for the sake of doing it. Because I had a lot of fun last year just cheering for all the underdogs, and the madness is going to unfold regardless. So,
well, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to fill out a bracket, but I'm going to make every Big Ten team lose in the first round and then see how accurate that ends up being. Because I'm guessing that that's going to be more advantageous than actually trying to pick.
That was part of what screwed me up 2 years ago. I faded the entire Big Ten except for Iowa. I had Iowa in like the Elite Eight or something.
There you go.
It was obscene. Nice.
Well, Purdue's going to lose in the first round again. They're all going to lose in the first round. That's going to be great. I'm going to be really happy.
Firmly believe that the first 2 days of the tournament should be national holidays.
I mean, they essentially are. I don't think anybody gets any work done. I was explaining.
That's why they should be holidays, because they're least productive days of the year every year. Like, if you're going to lose money anyway, just give everyone the day off.
There's a kid who comes into the library who's a foreign exchange student. She's from Sweden. And I was explaining to her, like, the whole culture that's around March Madness and how, like, nobody really is invested in anything that's happening at any job during this, just because of how, like, ubiquitous it is. But I was trying to explain, do you remember how, you know, so CBS streams all this stuff, right? Do you remember how they instituted that boss button a few years ago? Where, like,
no.
It's I don't know if they still have it, but it was like 10, maybe 5 or 10 years ago, and they put this thing called
Puts the fake like computer screen up so that they don't know that
it looks like you're doing work. I love that. And now people just kind of just shrugged and be like, oh, whatever. Nobody's going to be doing it.
I think they stole that from Pornhub or something.
But I loved it. And I think it's incredible. And it's a hard thing to explain how, you know, awesome it is. You know, it's basically, for me, it's like the World Cup and then the first couple days of March Madness. And they're my favorite sporting events. Like, I love the Olympics, but that's kind of a slow burn. You know, you'll pop in and out of it. For me, the World Cup, the first, you know, couple, like the group play
stage
of the World
Cup,
group stage of the World Cup, and then the first couple days of March Madness are my absolute favorite sporting events. So I'm excited. It'll be fun. I have no rooting interest. So as you said, that's part of the fun of it. You just root for upsets, and then hopefully we get some more like we did last season. Cause that was, I think, an all timer. That was one of my favorite ones. By the way, speaking of March Madness, I don't want to neglect the women. We do have Ohio State basketball in March Madness. That would be the women's team who I believe they pulled out. Like, you know, a lot of people, you know, they were a little worried that they would fall further than they did. But the Ohio State women's Buckeye basketball team are a second seed, which is, you know, I'll take that.
I think they were more worried they were going to get slotted in the same region as South Carolina.
Correct. And that was, I think, you know, the biggest concern. But instead, they're going to take on Maine. They're in Portland 3, I guess. So that's with USC's bracket. You've got some other notable teams in there, like, you know, like Baylor, for example, you know, Virginia Tech, UConn. All, you know, there are some big time names here, but it sets them up, I think, much better than in, you know, had they been in the South Carolina bracket. It sets them up to kind of replicate and hopefully improve upon what they did last season, which was their best finish ever. So, you know, if they get a Final Four out of this, I'll be pretty stoked. I don't know that South Carolina looks like an absolute monster right now. They can definitely beat Iowa, and I think they can definitely beat Southern California. So who knows? I this is a team when they play up to their, when they play up to their potential, it's a national championship potentially. Winning team, they just have to make sure that they bring that.
They drew the least intimidating of the USCs among the one seeds, so they have that correct. To be thankful for.
Yeah. So I think, and hey, Michigan's in that bracket. You might get an Ohio State Michigan matchup. You never know. That might be pretty sick.
I hope not. Michigan was the team that beat them last before they ripped off that huge streak after the Iowa win, I believe.
Yeah. Well, who did they skunk it up? Was that Maryland in the Big Ten tournament?
Where they yes, basically it was
forgot
Maryland.
To play basketball.
Yeah.
So hopefully they don't replicate that. They have a little bit of a fire under their butts, and they take care of business against Maine here in a few days.
Well, they got UConn in that bracket too, so it's they not do. Totally. I mean, in terms of like avoiding the teams that are ranked above them that you'd be afraid of, they mostly got to do that. But
right.
there's plenty of talent teams. In that region that they're going to have Absolutely. To overcome on their way to a Final Four.
Yeah, 100%. So. Tough sledding for everybody, but it'll be interesting to see how that goes. Before we get to Ask Us Anything, we want to remind you that you can help out the Dubcast at 11 Warriors because we're sponsored by the Dry Goods store at 11warriors.com, drygoods.11warriors.com, shirts, hats, stickers. If you want to show how excited you are about Ohio State playing in postseason basketball, I recommend buying a new shirt from 11 Warriors. Drygoods.11warriors.com. All kinds of great stuff. It's pretty cool. Let's do Ask Us Anything. We talked a lot about basketball here for the past half hour. Let's do some other crazy things because we got some good questions here. I sorted and organized them and we got one actually I think basically right after we recorded, or maybe the day after we recorded last week. So our good friend Alvin has been waiting patiently for a week for this. So let's go ahead and answer this one first. And he simply wants to know, what are our thoughts on cryptocurrency?
Oh, that's funny. Cause I live in Miami right next to the, right next to,
which
Brickle.
I assume is like crypto, like Bitcoin is probably
like crypto
essentially capital. A second currency in the entire city.
You know, a couple of years ago, I mean, I don't want to say like, you know, very, very bullish, but I thought that the kind of momentum that Bitcoin has right now, it was going to keep carrying over and not really dip, but obviously, I mean, it's still super volatile. I'm not,
yeah,
I'm not,
that's a nice way of putting it.
Yeah. I'm not super educated on the issue or even really educated to begin with, but I mean, what I will say is there's something to be said about just kind of the history of money and the way that like money has evolved over time for human convenience, that we're kind of at the stage now where I don't see a product like Bitcoin going away for, you know, decentralization's sake, or just, I'm not wording this well, because when I read about this a few years ago, I had a much better way of framing it in the context of like human history relative to the way that like currency has evolved. But I do think that, you know, there's going to be a permanent place for a commodity like Bitcoin, less so Ethereum, but, you know, one thing I can speak to very confidently as someone that used to work in the financial sector is that the financial system relative to the way banking transactions are processed, automatic clearinghouse, ACH, is incredibly inefficient compared to how like rapid and secure and, you know, easily verified blockchain transactions are. So from that purpose, and then going further, like with looking at the benefits that a decentralized currency has for the world, I don't see the major players like Bitcoin and Ethereum really going away, but more so obviously Bitcoin. Now, when you get further down in the weeds for like, you know, shit coins and whatever, as a lot of people like to refer to them,
right?
It's a lot of high risk, high reward. But I know plenty of people that have made quite a bit of money being early investors in those, and then just knowing when the right opportunity to sell has been. But I'm not going to pretend to be super educated on that issue, or even really know what I'm talking about relative to what I just said. But you know, I do think that I don't think it's going away. I can't say that it's gonna never dip below 30,000 again or whatever, because right. I honestly didn't think that was gonna happen when it hit 50 or 60 2 years ago. But what now I will say, 70, what it? I will say is, I knew people when I was working at the bank that I was at that were taking out second mortgages on their house to buy Bitcoin, and I wouldn't recommend doing anything like that. Don't take too much of the risk, but also don't be surprised if you wanted to get on the boat, that was 10 years ago. So right. If you've already missed the boat, don't look at it as like, still an opportunity to get on, because there's okay. really not, unless you're already correct. Playing with like 8 or 9 figures.
Right. And so that's why I would call it a Ponzi scheme, because and people sometimes use Ponzi scheme and pyramid scheme interchangeably, and they're not. And Ponzi scheme is really the idea that, you know, you're trying to attract new investors for the benefit of older investors.
To that point, I moved into my apartment in Miami the same week that the FTX arena became the Kaisa Center. So
there you go. Fantastic. So no, I really am incredibly skeptical of cryptocurrency, and the big reason is, well, there's a lot of reasons, but a big reason is the volatility. And you know, a lot of the people who get into it are getting into it because they're trying to convince other people to buy it, essentially to help themselves out, right? It's essentially you're trying to make your investment look better by having other people add to, you know, the marketplace. And it's not based on anything. Like the amount of actual transactions with Bitcoin, like that people are actually using, is just absolutely inconsequential next to everything else that's being done financially, right? Like people using hard currency or like digital, you know, whatever. Like it's such a infinitesimally small percentage of what overall actual money transfers are in the world, that it's wild to me that anybody would really believe that it could actually, like, you know, decentralize money or replace anything. It's never going to be that. It's just going to be this fringe investment tool that people with a ton of money who are already in it are going to try to hype up forever to get other people involved.
Well, I don't necessarily agree with that, because really when you get down to it, like even though you can talk about the gold standard, money, the only thing really backing money to begin with is confidence.
Sure.
Because when I talk about like the cycle in terms of history, I'm still not going to be able to word it as well as I did when I read about it 2 years ago. But I mean, you didn't have fiat currency even for a lot of human history, and you just had people that were arbitrarily trading goods and services based right. on what the value was to them at the time. Like, I will give you this cow for X bags of spices because we both need, like, that's it. You had right. to and just it, open you're right, trading you're right, you're for right. a while. Right. And then eventually it got to the point where it was like, we need some kind of, we need notes or some tangible way, a common standard that is going to make sense for everybody. Right. And what cryptocurrency does is, or at least, and this is why I don't think that long-term having a lot of different cryptocurrencies makes sense, but you know, Bitcoin, I think, is going to be around to stay, is just because you've got one common digital currency standard that works for everybody globally, that is more reliant on just human confidence as opposed to any official backing from any sort of government. So as yeah. long as you have consumer confidence in it, it's going to be around to stay because there is a demand for that. Well, I'm wording that very poorly. Don't put any stock into what I'm talking about.
Yeah, right. But this is not financial advice.
But I only offer that as a counter to what you're saying in terms of, oh, it's a Ponzi scheme. I don't necessarily agree with that, just because you can, if you're going to make that point about this, you can really say that about any money. It's just the amount of confidence that the public or society has in what they are transacting upon.
I understand what your point is. I'll just say the last thing I'll say about this is that the difference that I see is that
this is the most potentially destructive Ask Us Anything of all time.
Well, no, I mean, we're not financial experts. Obviously, nobody should take any financial advice by what we're saying. I just want to make that very clear. But what I'll say is this, the difference that I see is that you're right. Yeah, it's all about based on confidence or whatever. The difference is that the United States government has, it produces things, right? It creates goods and services as a GDP, right? It's something that you can actually, if you want to, you know, base the value of the dollar on something, there is something tangible that the American economy produces. You can quantify that. You can't quantify anything related to Bitcoin. It's all vibes. And it's like, to me, when you're relying on the hype levels of people who have invested money into this already, that seems like an incredibly risky, you know, investment or agreement when there's nothing, there is literally nothing tangible that can be gotten from it. Bitcoin doesn't produce anything. It doesn't do anything. It's just vibes. And that's something that I find incredibly dangerous.
Yeah, but I'm saying all money is vibes based.
Well, yeah, but no, but it's not. But the United States currency isn't vibes based.
You just have a lot of confidence in the government that they're going to keep the vibes on the money good.
No. You have confidence that the American economy is going to produce goods and services, which it does, and you can quantify it. You can't quantify anything that Bitcoin does. It's like it's there, and if people want to use it, they can. But it's not because it's so infrequently used for things. Like you can't. It's like I said, it's all about how many memes are being put on, you know, Reddit, which I just don't get. All right, real quick. So that was a lot of Bitcoin chat. Good question, Alvin. I appreciate that. This is interesting. So we kind of touched on Diebler and he said this is from Dominic. How do you not give Deebs a 1 to 3 year contract? You got a 5 year contract, Dominic. If he wins 2 games of the Big Ten tournament and gets in the dance, here's something that I find
only won one. Irrelevant. One.
But no, but that brings up an interesting question. Dominic seems like he wanted Diebler to get that contract if it was like a prove it kind of thing. He won a couple games, whatever. I wonder how fans like Dominic feel now that they didn't win 2 games and they didn't get into the dance and they gave him a 5-year contract, right? Like, I know a ton of people were super high on this, you know, the potentiality of this hire before the Illinois game. And I'm just curious if that changed anyone's opinions or if, you know, people are kind of like, you know, maybe not, maybe maybe I'm a little less excited about it.
I think it does bear wondering, like if Royal doesn't hit that, was it Royal that hit the game winner against Michigan State?
I can't remember off the top of my head.
Regardless, if they don't hit that game winner against Sparty, right, like, and that so changes not, it changes their Big Ten seating. It changes.
Do they hire Diebler?
Yeah, exactly. It's like, so like, does that know. One little snapshot moment that Diebler didn't really have any bearing over, even though he certainly coached them up well enough for them to come back in that game and win and snap that? It's important to remember that snapped their road losing streak.
Yes.
So if they don't get that monkey off their back in that instance, do they end up beating Rutgers, which would have been their only remaining opportunity to do so?
Right.
And then
that changes your seating in the Big Ten tournament.
Yeah, it changes a lot of the perception. And yeah, and not only that, but it changes, especially if they don't end up winning the Rutgers game after that, they're on a 20 game road losing streak at that point going into next season.
If they lose to Michigan State and Rutgers, they're not hiring Diebler. That's not happening. I mean, that's,
well, I mean, they still, if they win their other games, and then let's say that they win one game in the Big Ten tournament.
I don't know. I think that would be really rough. I think a lot of the narrative that was developed around Diebler was established because of how they ended the regular season. Beating Purdue obviously was a huge part of that, but beating Michigan State, you know, on the road, and yeah, I think they had to do that to get Diebler in the position that
they needed.
It's just wild that this all happened in 8 games.
Right. Like, they needed a game winning bailout shot against Michigan State in order to get that victory.
Right.
So it's like, if that one shot that doesn't really have anything to do with Diebler doesn't happen, are we still having the same discussion? It's the, that shot totally changed the course of his career, even though he didn't really have any bearing over it.
Yeah, no, that's bonkers.
It's not like that was a play he drew up.
That's right. No, he said after the game, he said he did draw up a play, and then Michigan State took it away from him, and so he just said, the hell with it, and let it rip, and they got it. All right, Josh sent in two questions. I'm going to use one of them, actually, later on, because it's maybe a little more relevant to, like, the draft. But he said that he watched a little bit of the Big Ten wrestling tournament at a bar last week, and he wondered if a Penn State-Ohio State rivalry could eventually form on the mat instead of the gridiron. I think it's the issue with that is twofold. First of all, wrestling is not popular enough at Ohio State. Obviously there was a huge peak in interest, you know, when you had, you know, guys like Snyder coming through and whatnot, not to say they don't have great wrestlers now, but I think that's when it was probably at its max. And of course, Ohio State ended up winning that national championship. But that's kind of ebbed a little bit. And because it's receded, I don't think you're going to have that much cachet. The other problem is Penn State is so damn good right now. They are so much better than everybody else, right? Than maybe just like one or two other programs nationally, that it's just too lopsided. That's the issue. I think Penn State is just a behemoth, and there's really, until they're taken down, it's going to be hard to form any true rivalry along those lines, I think, with them.
I agree. Sorry, I'm not the previous co-host that can rattle off like an entire educated.
No, I can't either. I mean, and that's unfortunate. And we do, you know, the wrestling, I love wrestling, and it's definitely something that we need to maybe analyze real quick. Last question. This is from Kevin. What is next? A 7-foot place kicker? I hope so.
That'd be fun.
I hope so. I hope they get the biggest. Who doesn't enjoy when a chunky kicker goes out there and bombs like a 65-yard punt, or like, you know, when some like gigantic dude, like, no, I hope all special teams players are offensive lineman size.
We had two kickers on my high school team, and the guy that would actually kick the field goals was like a former soccer player that was playing receiver for us, and he was like star on the basketball team. So like he was, you know, multi-sport athlete, but like midway through the season, we decided to pivot to making our like kickoff specialist one of our offensive linemen, who was like 6'4 or 365, and would just take two steps and just kick the thing all the way into the other opponent's end zone. And not only would do that, but then would just pick somebody out on the special teams on the kick return team. Like, not even we set up our coverage unit so the guy wouldn't have to pick a lane. He could just, the rest of us would worry about lanes, and he could just pick out anybody on the return unit that he wanted, and he would decleat them after taking two steps to kick the ball into the other end zone. So I am not for putting these scrawny 5'8" guys that are afraid to tackle in.
That's right.
On kickoff team. I am all about putting in the biggest person you have possible, and then just having them run hog wild. It's
100%.
So I look forward. I cannot wait for the first person that tries the new punter on Ohio State.
Oh my god, dude. And you know he's played like Australian rules football, so he can just probably just knock somebody's block off. It's going to be great. I'm very excited for that. All right, so let's get into some other things here. First of all, big football news. I mean, you know, just so much stuff going on here. But obviously, Tony Alford is.
This is what I thought our lead story was going to be going into this week.
Yeah, exactly. We'd be like, Illinois sucked. Whatever. Who cares? We'll see who they hire. But yeah, right. Exactly. Tony Alford's leaving. We don't have a ton of time to devote to it. But look, I guess, first of all, he's obviously persona non grata now, and he's a traitor, and he, you know, deserves to be put in the stocks and blah blah blah. But you know, Ohio State has obviously been the beneficiary of Michigan coaches. But the difference between those two things is that Tony Alford made a bad decision, and those Michigan coaches who came to Ohio State made a good decision, because Michigan is bad and Ohio State is good. So that's one part of it. The other part of it is like, you know, everybody else signed contracts at the end of last season. Like, all these other coaches are like, all right. I find it hard to believe that Tony Alford wasn't, at least they didn't try to extend him or try to give him some more cash or give him a new contract. So to me, this seems like, you know, maybe a long time coming, and it's, again, sucks and just a, you know, crappy move to go to your rival, you know, within the conference. And that's, you know, I have no, like, I'm not going to make any excuses for that. That just sucks. But maybe not totally unexpected, I guess, would be my perspective on that. I don't know.
It was pretty shocking. I mean, spring practice already started.
That's the thing about
it. I don't know how you interpret it as anything other than spiteful.
Yeah. Yeah. It feels spiteful, right? And that's, like, I wasn't surprised that he left, but to go to Michigan specifically feels spiteful. And it just, I don't know. It's just such a crappy move, and especially in the middle of practice, like that sucks.
Well,
like,
hopefully it's as effective as a hire as Al Washington was for Ohio State.
That's
so.
Right. Yeah, that's right. I don't know who they're going to replace him with. There's been a lot of, like, people talking about, you know, like Pepe Pearson, possibly a guy who's been, you know, coaching for a long time. What, DeMarco Murray? I don't know.
That made me feel so old hearing that name, that DeMarco Murray's already being floated as a coaching candidate replacement.
I was like, wait a minute, is he not still in the NFL? Like, I don't, but no, he's been a coach for several years. That was definitely one of those, what the hell are we talking about?
It's the guy that Zeke replaced in his rookie season. Right. Just think about that.
Yeah. So I don't know. I have no insight on who they will hire or who they should hire, honestly. It feels like one of those things where you just, again, you want a guy with experience, somebody who's, you know, kind of proven, you know, who that they can be successful in that arena. I heard Mike Hart's, you know, looking for jobs, so who knows? I don't know. But
that'd be incredibly ironic if they replaced him with Mike Hart. But
they're not going to, because I think the reasons why he left Michigan are like, not coach, you know, one of those things that leads you to not coach. But I don't know, man. It's just a stupid situation. And again, for him to pull this in the middle of spring practice is especially lame. So I hope he has no success whatsoever. And good luck coaching Donovan Edwards, who averaged like 3 yards a carry last season. I'm sure that's going to go great.
He's going to help him revolutionize the running back position.
That's right. That's right. Speaking of Michigan, Juwan Howard got canned. That's funny.
Who could have seen it coming?
Well, apparently not Michigan fans, because there were all these indications that they were going to keep him for another year, and they went out. I mean, I don't know if anybody watched their Big Ten tournament game. I was stunned at how inept that team looked. I mean, I've watched a few Michigan basketball games this year, obviously, you know, just with them playing Ohio State, whatever. And it's not just that they're the worst team in the Big Ten. They're the worst team in the Big Ten by a wide margin. And I think everybody saw that in the Big Ten tournament, because it's one of those things where it's like a regular season conference game, and people can kind of write stuff off. But now that everybody's watching in a conference tournament, I think it was pretty obvious to everybody just how awful the team was. And if you couple that with the fact that, you know, Juwan Howard's hit another coach and, you know, almost came to blows with his strength and conditioning guy, like, that's the kind of stuff that predictably gets somebody fired. So I think Ward Manuel had to, you know, pull that trigger and make that decision, you know, to get rid of him, because that might have been his job if he hadn't, because it was pretty clear that team would only even continue to get worse. Well, and they've just lost their best player. So
I don't know if Ward Manuel's totally out of the woods yet either.
He may not be for as long as he defended his boy. I mean, that's gonna leave a bad taste in a lot of people's mouth. So I don't know, man. And like I said, they just lost their best players, who's announced that he's gonna transfer. So yeah, I don't know. Doug McDaniel, he's out. He led them in scoring. I think it was like 16 points this past season. And, you know, They lost their best player from the previous season. They're going to lose their best player again this season. And they look like they're just kind of a, like I said, giant tire fire, which is very fun and enjoyable to me. I am happy about that.
Until they rehire John Beilein, who apparently has interest in the job, but may not get a call.
I still don't know that a 71-year-old dude who doesn't understand how NIL works is going to, I don't know how that would work out. I don't feel like that would be a success, but we'll
see.
People
keep making that point, but what, he doesn't know. First of all, they've been playing, players in Michigan since the 90s.
Oh, sure.
Of course,
okay.
They know how it works.
Okay. That's right. They've got the ledgers. They'll just dust them off. They're like, all right, let's get this thing going. Chris Holtmann. I promised we would talk about his super salty comments. I wouldn't say salty, but you know, he was given a lot of opportunity in his introductory conference at DePaul to like say something nice about Ohio State and refused to do it.
The only time he wouldn't say give credit in a press.
Yeah, that's
conference.
That's right. He didn't give any credit to Jake Diebler. Wouldn't even mention him. Just went out and just, you know, I think kind of performed like the pissy little POS that, you know, sometimes he's revealed himself to be. And yeah, I know. Now that he's gone, I'll say the mean stuff, I guess. I don't know, man. DePaul's interesting because I guess in the back of my, you know, addled millennial brain, I was like, this is a good program. No, it's not. DePaul's terrible. DePaul is a garbage program right now. They have not won a single conference game this season. They are 0-20.
Yeah, so, for the rep Chicago has as a basketball city, they kind of stink all around, to be totally honest.
Yeah, it's DePaul's garbage, and I thought they were like kind of good or something. No, they're straight trash. So they haven't even had a better than 500 record since 2019. They went 3-16 in the Big East that year. All 16 of their losses were conference losses. So this is a bad team, and Holtmann's going to get $1 billion and $1 trillion to be a mediocre coach. So good for him, I guess.
For a mid-major guy, it's a great mid-major to be at in terms of, you know, nowhere to go but up.
He'll get him to the dance in like 4 years, and then they'll give him a 10-year contract. So
I thought it was interesting the question that was posed to the 11 Warriors staff today, which was who has a longer leash, Holtmann or Diebler?
Oh, Holtmann. Yeah. It's got to be Holtmann.
No, I agree.
100%. Because DePaul is starting at a much, much lower place. So as long, I mean, shoot, if he gets them to a winning season, they don't even care if they
Or I'm sorry, out. Not a longer leash, but just who do you see staying, like being at their school longer or staying on their job? Like who's going to have
that's
the longer tenure between those two?
That's a much more difficult question.
Yeah, that's what I meant to say.
No, but that makes sense because, you know, if Diebler is successful, then, if he ends up being, like, the truth and he comes out and they make the NCAA tournament and they win a couple games, they'll do the same thing to Paul do. They'll give him a 10-year contract. Ohio State will want him around forever because he's, you know, so young and they want to lock down the talent. On the other hand, all Chris Holtmann has to do is be mediocre and he'll still get a 10-year contract. So that's a really interesting question. A couple other things here. Justin Fields to the Steelers. As a Bengals fan, you know, you don't want to see him there. Like, you don't want to have to root against him. But I don't know. He's going to be the backup.
I'm a Bears and a Steelers fan, so I'm absolutely torn about how this happened. This is, like, the worst possible.
The Steelers gave him away for, like, a bag of magic.
This is the worst possible thing that could have happened for me as a fan of both teams. Because I wanted the Bears to keep Fields.
Right.
And that didn't happen. And they gave him away. They basically acknowledged that even though that they said that there were like four teams that were trying to trade for him, but because the Steelers were Fields' primary option that they wanted to do right by him, mm-hmm. I hate the idea that they're going to probably now draft Caleb Williams and after invest, especially after just trading for Keenan Allen and finally getting, you know, a decent supporting cast for which he could have maybe done something with. Now the narrative is going to be that, you know, he didn't prove himself enough and that's why the league wasn't interested in trading for him and that he's kind of damaged goods. And so the Steelers have now gotten him for a bargain, but they're not even going to be playing him right away.
Yeah, how weird is that quarterback room going to be in Pittsburgh?
it's devastating, man. I mean,
so weird.
Russell Wilson is like, it's the worst buyout of, or not a buyout, but they were talking about how he's the largest dead cap hit in NFL history for the Broncos.
Right.
And it's like, yeah, it's great that they
so much of his contract.
It's great that they got Wilson. I think either this year or next year is going to represent a fifth of the Broncos salary cap, despite not playing on the team. And it's like, yeah, it's great. You got that guy for the vet minimum, but there's a reason he was available. And for a franchise that historically does very right by their Buckeyes, you just wonder how much they're actually going to, you know, put Justin Fields in a position to be successful, given he's not even competing with Russell Wilson. He has to sit behind. They've already committed to Wilson as the starter. So it's an all-around lose situation for me as a fan of both teams.
Yeah, it's really weird. I don't know. I want to see Justin Fields be successful. I do think that there are some things skill-wise with him as a quarterback that I don't know that he's ever going to be like a good NFL quarterback. I think he can be a serviceable backup, but it's pretty obvious, I think, by now that he can't read defenses the way that a guy like CJ Stroud can. With that said, I mean, I don't know what's going to happen with Russell Wilson. I mean, that dude's weird and also old. So if he gets hurt, I mean, what are they going to do? Like, they got to put him in. So
I'm just glad the Steelers on paper are getting more ROI than the Browns are from their quarterback room.
That's so. Well, and they're also not paying $250 million for the...
Well, that's my point, is that you're not getting $250 million play from Deshaun Watson.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Okay, another tidbit here. Women's hockey in the Frozen Four yet again. Just by the way, with all this talk about coaches, I just do want to point out that the best coach, you know, for any sport, pound for pound, is Nadine Muzzerall, and she's got her team in the Final Four, Frozen Four yet again. So good for her. That's going to be pretty sick. They beat the absolute crap out of Minnesota Duluth 9-0. So that's fun. It's, you know, they're gonna keep rolling. I want to see another national championship. They've made the Frozen Four 5 times since 2018, and I'm pretty excited about that. So they'll be playing soon, and I'm pretty stoked. So I think they're in New Hampshire to play Clarkson, which I have no information about either New Hampshire or Clarkson. I have very little info about those plays.
Yeah, they're going for their third straight national title appearance, which I don't know how many times that's been done in women's hockey, but I would like
or
to
any
see
so.
It.
I mean, shit, that's pretty impressive either way. So I want a natty. I want another natty. And by the way, I'm going to put this out there on the Dubcast. I promise that if they win another national championship, I will buy some women's hockey national championship gear and encourage other people to do so. I will get an official thing because I think it's sick. And I also think that, like I said, Nadine Muzzerall is the best coach that Ohio State has. Last thing before we get out of here, pretty crazy story, one that we didn't really have time to really touch on or whatever, but former Ohio State wrestler Mark Coleman, UFC Hall of Famer, he was admitted to the hospital in critical condition. He had smoke inhalation. His parents' house was on fire. He dragged him out. I think the dog like warned him about what was going on. He had severe smoke inhalation. He was in a medically induced coma. It was really terrible. And he was out. He overcame it.
He's already back at the gym.
Yeah. So he's doing all right. He's doing pretty good. I think that's pretty incredible. Tom Ryan, wrestling coach, so that he's a warrior, clearly. You know, it's incredibly sad about his dog. Unfortunately, Hammer was lost in this fire, but he was able to save his parents, and you know, he's still kicking, so I think that's pretty incredible. So definitely a hero there for saving his family, and we're all incredibly happy that the guy's still around and you know, able to keep doing what he loves.
Yep, quite a turnaround. Rest in peace to Hammer. But yep. it's it could have been much worse, obviously. And the Ohio State wrestling has already seen enough tragedy recently. Tragedy might be a strong word because nobody's actually lost their lives, I don't think. But you know, between Sasso recently getting shot and this, it's nice. I hope that Sasso can have as good of a comeback as Mark Coleman appears to have. Hopefully, that Coleman's own recovery inspires Sasso to return to great heights in some way. So, a lot of resiliency in the Ohio State wrestling program, both among current members and alumni. And you like to see that as a Buckeye fan. So 100%. I'm glad Mark Coleman's okay.
That's right. So that's the Dubcast for this week. We'll be back next week to talk about how much we love the NIT tournament and how much women's basketball is the greatest sport ever done. And women's hockey is really the thing that we should all be paying attention to anyway. But until then, I'm Johnny.
I'm George.
And we'll see you next week.
Take care, folks.